going to continue in this series, Fixer Upper. And as when we started this series, I acknowledged right up front that every Fixer Upper, you guys remember this, every Fixer Upper is different. Every Fixer Upper is unique. Some Fixer Uppers are married with kids, some are married with no kids, some are single parent homes, some are widowed. There's just so many. And so I'm just asking that as we go through this, I hope that through each sermon in this series, you're able to take something away and apply it to your fixer-upper. Or tuck it away and help someone else with their fixer-upper, okay? Now, if you haven't been with us for a while, or maybe this is your first time here, we're in the middle of this series, Fixer-Upper. And what we're doing is we're talking about how to build stronger Christian homes. And so we started by saying that it's all based on our foundation. Our foundation is our faith in Jesus, and then we moved into the investments of emotional, physical, and spiritual investments in our homes. We talked about how we need to, about the expectations we have and about how to equip. And then we talked about getting into a rhythm of rest. And last week we talked about unity, marital unity. And how we need to make sure that our fixer-uppers are united in every way imaginable. And last week, I gave you some homework to do. How many of you did your homework last week? I see one hand. Are you kidding me? Okay, two. I did mine. Yeah, we did ours. Do your homework. Do that stuff. Do that 15-second kiss and that 15-minute couch time and date night. Do those things, okay? So continue to do that, and I promise you, if you do that for 30 days, it'll really start to shape your marriage in a different way. This week, we're going to talk about something that I believe applies to every person in this room. I really do. It's a challenge to all of us, and I'm talking about the responsibility of discipling children, and that applies to everyone in this room. If I were going to call this a sermon a title, I'd call it Parental Guidance. However, if you're not a parent, listen, this still applies to you. Through and through, this applies to you. Because I believe if you have any influence at all on any child, you'll be able to take something that we talk about today and help that child. And we all have influence in some way on a child at some point in her life. I'll never forget the day that Kelly and I brought our first child home from the hospital, Mackenzie, our little baby girl. It was a great day. That was over 15 years ago. And I remember how excited we were. But I also remember that during the midst of all the excitement of bringing her home, I felt overwhelmed. We stopped at a gas station, and I was putting gas in the car. And as I'm standing back there in the back of the vehicle, putting the gas in, I just looked in the back door window, and I saw her sitting there in a car seat. And I just got flooded with emotion, with just the thought of, wow, I don't know if I can do this. This is a big response. This is a little life, depending on us. I'm glad she was there a whole lot. How am I going to take care of this child? What a responsibility. I don't know if I'm up for it. I never really had a dad in my life long enough to learn what it means to be a dad. Can I do this, God? I'm not sure. Then 19 months later, we had our second child, Hayden. And through excited eyes of exhaustion, we were excited. And I didn't give it much thought at first. You know, I'd been a dad for 19 months. Thought I knew everything there was to know. But driving home from Bloomington to Lincoln, I was suddenly overwhelmed again. I thought, all right, been a dad to Mackenzie, but now I'm bringing home a son. And I have to teach him. I have to teach him how to be a man. And I'm not sure anybody ever taught me how to be a man, what it is to be a man. Can I do that? What's it mean to be a dad? What's it mean to teach a boy to be a man? And then 27 months later, we had Ian, our third child. And I remember thinking, what do we do now? We're outnumbered. It's 3-on-2. Now, if you play basketball, you know that's not good odds. overwhelmed with responsibility. I don't think I'm alone in this. I don't think I am at all. You know what I'm talking about. There's this sense of responsibility for another human life. Some of you were so excited to be parents, and then when that day came and it arrived, you too felt overwhelmed with responsibility. How do I take care of this child? How do I feed them day in? How do I know what they're going to like? What if they don't like the way I cook? How do I potty train them? That's a big one. Everything from Cheerios to M&Ms. We try everything. How do I change a diaper? How do I get them ready for school? How do I get them ready for college? How do I get them ready for marriage? How do I get them ready to be parents themselves? All kinds of questions. One of the greatest pieces of advice I believe Kelly and I ever received is the day you bring your child home, start preparing them to leave. You only have 18 years. Unfortunately, we prepare our children to depend on us. That's what we want. But we need to prepare them to leave. You only have 18 years to do all this. I also know others of you who have longed for the day to be parents, and you have tried and tried, and for many and varied reasons, it's just not the case. Some of you have miscarried. Others of you have experienced things like SIDS. Others of you have had to watch your children as they've been born with a birth defect and their life was short-lived. And my heart absolutely breaks for all of you. I have no idea, and I'm not going to try and pretend to have any idea of what you've experienced. I have no idea what you feel. Some of you here this morning are in the middle of the grieving process as I speak. And if we can help you in any way, please let us know. At the end of our service, we'll have people available. I mean, they'll just be hanging around, not necessarily doing an invitation, but we'll have people available hanging around that if you need to pray or talk, we'll have elders, staff, people in our prayer team that'll just be up front, ready to meet with you and pray with you and help you in any way they can. Some of you have never had your own children. Some because you're single. And you have honored God with your bodies. And you may want children, but you've determined I'm not going to dishonor God with my body by having children out of wedlock. Others of you don't have biological children, but you've realized that there's an overwhelming need for children to have a safe home to grow up in. And you've put yourself in a very vulnerable place, and you've entered into foster care, or you have taken the next step and adopted, and that's awesome. And thank you. You're making a difference. You're having influence on a child's life. Of all the topics in this series, this one is probably the most sensitive and the most complex. So I really hope you hear my heart this morning in this sermon. I'll try and address as much as I can, because I know some of you here today, and especially in our second service where a lot of those college students are, they're future parents. Some of them are going to be future fixer-uppers, single with no kids. Some of them are going to be, you know, future foster parents. Some of them are going to, in the future, experience the pain of losing a child. But no matter where you are on that parenting spectrum, God's Word has something to say to all of us about our involvement in the lives of children, whether they are our biological children, adoptive children, foster children, children entrusted to our care, even for a short while, children of our best friends, or children in our neighborhood, or children in our church family. Some of you have said to me, "Hey, Donnie, don't forget about those of us who have adult children, stupid adult children who make stupid choices." Those are your words, not mine, but I had some of you come to me and tell me that. So we won't forget them either. But for simplicity's sake, this morning, I'm going to use the word parent. And when I use that word parent, think of yourself, an adult who has the responsibility of investing in discipling a child. So when I use that word parent, think of yourself. And here's what I want you to walk away with. Parenting is when God entrusts to us someone who really belongs to Him. That's what parenting is. That was a revelation to me. There was one night I was praying with our children, my and Kelly's kids, and it hit me. These are not my kids. They're not mine. They're entrusted to my care. Oh, they are God's children, just like I'm God's child. But he's entrusted them to my care. So let's listen to God's word on the matter as adults influencing children. I love this passage. It's in Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6. Some of you don't even have to turn there. I would encourage you to if you would. But most of us know this. When Proverbs 22, 6 says this, train a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not turn from it. Here's something I want you to notice right away. This passage is not talking. So listen, this passage is not talking exclusively to parents. It's not. This is not exclusively for parents. Instead, it's an open statement to anyone who has been entrusted by God with someone who really belongs to God, who has influence on a child's life, parents included, but not parents only. So what that means is that though my children have two parents at home, they still have other adults who influence them, who speak into their lives. We have actually sat down with our kids and we've told them, we said, hey, if there's something going on in your life and you don't feel comfortable coming to mom and dad, here's a list of people we would encourage you to go to. And it's folks right here in our church. We want them to know that those are safe places to go. And I think we've talked to most of you. Some of you might get surprised, but that's okay. A shocker is good for you every now and then. So what that means is that we want our kids to know that others can speak into their lives. Other people shape them and help them walk through life. Because there's going to be that time they're not going to feel comfortable coming to us. I also want you to notice that very first word, train. That's the Hebrew word, henak. And it means exactly what it says, to train or disciple. But used broadly, it means to instruct in accordance with proper rules of conduct and behavior, which would include both principle and teaching holy ritual. What it means is this. Training a child within the context of this proverb means that it begins with the instruction of the Bible. It's biblical instruction. The Apostle Paul reminded Timothy that all Scripture is God-breathed, and it's useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness. Teaching children the truths of Scripture will make them wise for salvation. Of all the things that you may want for your children, the most important thing that you can teach your child is the way of salvation, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Paul says, Scripture will make them wise unto salvation. We need to thoroughly equip our children to do good works. We need to prepare them to give an answer to everyone who asks them the reason for the hope that they have. That's what Peter said in 1 Peter 3. And prepare them to withstand and the onslaught of cultures bent on indoctrinating young people with secular values. One of my favorite passages that Paul shares in Romans 12 too. Don't conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewal. That flows right down to children. There's probably no more impressionable mind than the mind of a child. We need to be careful what's going into the minds of our children. So quite literally, what Solomon is talking about here is about building a life, training a child, building a life which God is the architect of our children, and we are the builders of our children according to God's design. Listen to how the psalmist describes God as an architect, if you will, in Psalm 139. He said, for you created my innermost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb, and I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. As builders, we are to build, or we are to train them according to the way God designed them, the way God knit them together. Listen, no, this is important. No one blueprint fits every child. So what that means is that we have a task ahead of us of understanding how to read different blueprints of childhood. God's the architect. We are the builders. Just like a building, every building has a different set of plans. Every child has a different set of plans. So we need some training. We need to ensure we know what we're doing here. So we need to train our children to, first of all, know their love language. I believe that's huge. Our children need to understand how they receive love and how to express love. God designed them with a love language, and we're here to help them understand their love language. Now, I want to share with, and what I mean by that is that's the way they express love, and that's the way they receive love. I don't think anybody's done any better job at any of this than Dr. Gary Chapman. He says, knowing your child's love language can make all the difference in your relationship. So just think about your relationship with your child. Now, if you're a child, which we all are, think about the relationship you had with your parents. Did they understand how to express love to you in a way that was meaningful? Have you expressed love to your children in a way that's meaningful? If you're not a parent, the children that are involved in your life, do you know how to express love to them? Have you read their blueprint? So I want to share with you the five love languages that Dr. Chapman suggests. First of all is physical touch. We have a kid whose love language is physical touch. Hugs and kisses are the most common way of speaking his love language. There's other ways too. You know, when you throw your kid in the air, make sure you catch him on the way down. Kids love that. You know, when you spin your daughter on your toes and you dance with them, the kids love that. When they cuddle up in your lap and you can read to them or tell them stories, kids love that. Those are kids who love that physical touch. For children who understand this love language, physical touch will communicate love more deeply than will the words, I love you. They really will. Or giving them a present or fixing a bike or spending time with them, physical touch communicates to them more than anything else. Of course, they receive love in all the other languages. Doesn't mean you exclude all the other love languages that we'll cover, but for them, physical touch is primary. It's the one that has the clearest and loudest voice for them. And some of you know what I'm talking about. You have those kiddos who want to cuddle with you at night. No matter how old they are, they still like for you to tuck them in and give them a kiss on the forehead or whatever. They like their back rub. They like to rub your back. That's just great. That's physical expressions of love. So that's one. Know your kid's love language. And number two is words of affirmation. Man, I believe this one's huge. I think we need to express words of affirmation to every kid, no matter what their love language is. But you're going to have kids in your house, and we have one in ours, a different one. Their primary love language, I believe, is words of affirmation. And I need to remember that a lot of times. All right? In communicating love, words are powerful. Words of affection and encouragement, words of praise, words of endearment, words that give positive guidance. They all say, I care about you. These words are like a gentle, warm rain falling on the soul. I mean, they really are. They nurture the child's inner sense of worth and security. Some of you grew up in homes where you didn't feel like you had any worth. There was no security. Your love language was words of affirmation, and all you ever heard was negativity thrown your way. I know that. I've talked to you. That's what some of you have experienced. Some of you have children in your home or children in your care who need words of affirmation. Even though such words are quickly said, they're not soon forgotten. A child reaps the benefits of affirming words for a lifetime. This is the kid who you see a beam radiate from deep inside when you speak a word of encouragement. A kid who may not smile very much, but when you speak a word of encouragement to them, that smile spreads across their face. Those discouraging words, they linger around for years and years as well. Just remember, oh, be careful, little tongue, what you say. Words of affirmation are a big love language for kids. Another one is quality time. Quality time is focused attention. It means giving your child undivided attention. Okay, quality time is a parent's gift of presence to a child. It conveys the message, you're more important. I like being with you. It makes the child feel that they're the most important person in the world to the parent. And this child will feel truly loved because his parent is focused on them for that period of time. When you spend quality time with your children, you need to get down to their physical, emotional, spiritual level and develop them. And the most important factor in, well, the most important factor in quality time is not the event itself, but that you're doing something together. You know, a lot of times we'll take a big vacation. We think that's the quality time. No, it's the little things. It's the little trips to Dairy Queen we talked about earlier. It's the just sitting out on the deck. We have a kid. This is one of theirs. It's a big one of theirs. Quality time. I was sitting out on the deck late at night taking the dog out, and one of my kids just walked out and just sat out there with me because they just wanted. I was like, "What are you doing?" They're like, "I just want to be with you." And I was like, "Oh, that's great." Quality time. Fourth one is gifts. I know every kid wants everything. Go in the store, and it doesn't mean you have to buy them everything they ask for. But some kids, their spiritual, their love language is gifts. The giving and receiving of gifts can be a powerful expression of love. These are the kids that when you give them something, they're truly appreciative. Now, I don't know. There are some kids, you can give them, and they're not very appreciative. They don't seem like they care. And as a parent, you're like, don't you care about this? I mean, can't you just appreciate this? No, because that's not their love language. They really don't. That's a reality, folks. But the kid whose primary love language is gift giving and receiving, boy, that's going to be special to them. So know your kids. Know what it is. And then finally is acts of service. I think this is one of those love languages that communicates across the to every child with every love language. This is where you go in, you do the dirty dishes. It's that kind of thing. It's those acts of service. Some people speak acts of service as their primary love language. This is where you want to come alongside and you want to do something for someone else, not because of guilt, but because that's the way you express love. When you fix that child's bike, when you take time to do that or to mend their dress or to merely just do a task, your child is experiencing that emotional love that they need. If your child's primary love language is acts of service, doesn't mean you have to jump every time a request is made. It does mean that you should be extremely sensitive to those requests. Recognize that your response will help fill their love tank. This is the kid who comes alongside you and helps you with a project so that they can show you how much they love you. They're the one that says, "Let me help Dad. Let me help Mom." They want to be involved. Those are the five love languages. I think they're a great way. And it takes a lot of work to figure those out. And I want to encourage you to look at them, figure it out. Second, I'm going to move on. God's the architect, we're the builder. So we need to train our children to understand their temperament. I think this is huge. Children need an outlet to express their feelings, to express their frustrations. And we need to help them harness that. Kids are going to express that one way or the other. Okay, and so as parents, we need to come alongside them, understand how they see the world, and then help them. I mean, being a parent, being involved in a child's life is a huge responsibility. So even if you aren't the parent, maybe you don't have a child of your own, when you're entrusted with that child in any level, help them understand their temperament. That's huge. Now, God designed them with a love language. He'd also designed them with a temperament. We have to help them understand it. Now, I'm not wanting to turn this into a psychology class, but if you're going to train a child, if you're going to build a child, you have to understand how to read the blueprints, okay? Some of us were never taught how to read blueprints. We weren't necessarily raised. So let's look at our passage again. There's a phrase in there, train a child in the way he should go, right? I believe this has been one of the most guilt-ridden passages ever. People have come to me and they're like, "We trained our child. We raised them in a Christian household. We took them to church every time the doors were open. They were in Sunday school. They went to VBS. They went to camp. They did this and they did that. And they're on their fifth marriage, don't go to church, haven't seen the Lord in forever, and they're doing drugs and they're drunk all the time, and they're as far away from Christ as they could be. What happened? We're terrible parents." No. No. This isn't a promise. This passage isn't a promise, as many people have taught it to be. This passage is a proverb, not a promise. And there is a difference. And this doesn't say, train a child in the way he should go, and when he's old. It says, train a child according to his way. What's that mean? That means I need to understand my child. I can't just raise all my children with one set of blueprints. I can't use the blueprints my parents used to raise me to raise my child. Train a child according to his way. And when he's old, he won't depart from it. God designed children with a specific temperament. Okay, if you have three kids in your household, or if you coach 10 kids, you'll have three different blueprints or 10 different blueprints. So it's important to help our children understand their strengths and what they have to offer and how to control their temperament. And I want to warn you that a personality type is not intended to define us or lock us in to a mold. For some, you already know these, but for others, this might be new. Even if you know them, approach it afresh, okay? Now, these come from a great resource called Your Child Wonderfully Made, and it's just the disc, but it's broken down for children, okay? So these are the personality types. And maybe you already noticed these in your kids. Maybe one of them is, one of them is dominant. Maybe you have a child who's dominant. These children are naturally motivated to control their environment. Now, sometimes they may control it with temper tantrums because they haven't been taught how to control it better, but they're usually assertive. They're direct. They're strong-willed. Some of us have three of those in our household. They're typically bold. They're not afraid to take strong action to get the desired results they want. And so they function best in challenging environments. So put them in challenging environments. The next is influencing. These are kids that are naturally driven to relate to other people. Maybe you see your child and they just naturally go up and they just start conversations with people all the time. They're the ones that comes along, that new kid in class, and they help them to assimilate into that class or get involved in that class. Well, encourage that child in that direction. Usually they're verbal, they're friendly, they're outgoing, they're very optimistic. They're the kind of people you want to be around because they're optimistic. And they're typically enthusiastic motivators. They're the ones that get other people charged up. Then there's the steady kid. These kids are naturally motivated to cooperate. They're the ones that everybody goes, oh, such a good little child. Does what I tell them to do. Does it the first time. They're steady. They're naturally motivated to cooperate and support others. They're usually patient and consistent, and they're very dependable, very pleasant, easygoing. They're excellent team players. May not be the best team leader, but they're great team players. And they function best in a harmonious environment. And then there's the conscientious. These kids, man, they're focused on doing things right. Not just getting things done, but doing them right. And they're usually very detailed oriented. Okay, and they find it easy to follow guidelines. They like rules. They like structure. Now, those dominant kids, they want to create rules. They want to show you how your rules don't function right, and they'll show you a new way to do them. But these conscientious kids, they like to abide by your rules. They strive for accuracy and quality. And they set high standards for themselves. So they see, you can see that there's a negative side to that. They can become perfectionist, and no one's perfect. But that's what they strive for, and so they can constantly beat themselves up. But so you got a lot of work to do in this. And they function best in very structured environments. See, God's designed them like this, and we have to help them understand how to apply this in ways that honors God. And this takes work. But remember, parenting is when God entrusts someone to our care who really belongs to Him. And then finally, God's the architect, we're the builders, right? So something else we need to do is we need to train our children to discover their talents, all right? We have to encourage children in our lives not to bury their talents. God has blessed them with something miraculous and wonderful in some way. We must come alongside them, help them develop their talents. Remember the parable of the talents Jesus used? He used that when he said one of the things that really torqued him off was when one of the servants buried their talents that they'd been given. Encourage your children to discover their talents. God gave them their talents for a reason. We must not only train our children in godly character, but also in accordance with the way God has made them and the talents He's given them. Now, I want to give you two ways to do this, all right? First, real quick, one of the things we have to do is we need to talk with God. as parents, as people who have influence on a child's life, no matter where you are, you need to talk to God. Listen, get alone with God. Spend time with Him. Ask God to teach you how to train up the child or children in your life. Maybe you don't have kids in your home, but maybe you got a slew of kids in your neighborhood. How can you impact their life? And pray every day for the wisdom needed to make the changes you need to make in order to be a disciple maker your children need you to be. And remember, God doesn't make mistakes. Some of you really need to hear this. God doesn't make mistakes. Stop wishing your kid was like someone else. Stop wishing your kid acted like someone else's. So first, talk with God. Next, I know I'm losing your attention. They're cuter than me. I got it. But hang on just a second. Second, so first, talk with God. Second, talk with your kids, not at your kids. This is where you come in and create a safe place for your kids to fail. As they explore, as they discover their talents, their personality, and their temperament, their love language, this is training ground. Your home, your fixer-upper is a training ground. It should be a safe place to fail. This is where words of encouragement and real communication take place. So this morning, I want you to look in your bulletin. There's an insert. Hope you grabbed one. If you didn't grab a bulletin on your way in, get one on the way out. So I don't care if you have kids at home or not. All right? Look in your bulletin. There's an insert. And it has a list of resources that we put together for you to help you train your child according to God's blueprint. So please, please use these resources. Some of you may say, well, you know, I don't have influence on you. Maybe you have grandkids. Maybe there's kids in your neighborhood. It doesn't matter. Understand these. Work through these. Encourage children any way you can to understand how God has created them fearfully and wonderfully made.